Thanks, Nathan. Good morning, everybody. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. We're going to start today with a conversation about transparency in local government. But before we do, I want to update you on the status of Carla Hayden's appointment to be the next Librarian of Congress. Her nomination was approved yesterday by the Committee on Rules and Administration. Senator Roy Blunt, the chair of that committee, said in a statement, quote, "Leading the Library of Congress requires multitasking on a scale rarely seen in other government organizations. I'm confident Dr. Hayden will bring a great background and skill set to the job," unquote. He told the Baltimore Sun's John Fritzy that he hoped Dr. Hayden's nomination would be approved by the full Senate before legislators leave town in mid-July. If confirmed, Dr. Hayden would be the country's first African-American, the first woman, and believe it or not, the first professional librarian to hold the most important librarian job in the country. We look forward to having Dr. Hayden on the show as soon as her nomination is confirmed to talk about her plans for the Library of Congress and her very successful tenure as the director of the Enoch Pratt Free Library here in Baltimore. Now it's time for another installment of the Accountability Index. It's our monthly conversation with reporters from the Baltimore Brew about fiscal and policy accountability in state and local government. Today, we take a look at the Baltimore Development Corporation's decisions to close some or all of their meetings while they discuss things like the plan to transform Port Covington into a kind of a city within a city that will include a new headquarters for Under Armour. The BDC evaluates so-called public-private partnerships like this all the time, and they are subject to the open meeting laws that are designed to assure transparency whenever these public-private investments are made. Mark Reuter from the Baltimore Brew joins us again to explain why some recent meetings of the BDC have been a lot more private than public and why that matters. Morning, Mark. Good to see you.
Good morning. Good to be here.
So the Baltimore Development Corporation is a nonprofit organization, and it serves kind of as the economic development agency for the city. So they try to keep businesses in town and expand so that we get new businesses. They are subject to these open meeting laws. Give me some examples of when it's okay for them to close part of their meetings or even all of their meetings.
Well, under the Maryland Open Meetings Act, there's a lot of exceptions to open meetings, which allows a meeting, public meeting, to be put into a closed session. Lots of these involve personnel matters,
sometimes if they're talking about financial stuff, like, you know, private securities and things like
that. That's one thing, but a lot of it also really involves personnel matters, possibilities of licensing potential criminal conduct that might involve an employee. A lot of it really is personnel material. However, the BDC uses routinely a few exceptions involving the disclosure of financial information by a private party.
I mean, obviously, if you've got a firm like Under Armour and they're very much involved in the mix in this plan to, develop Port Covington, they may have some financial information that they would consider proprietary, and that if it were made public, it might give a competitive advantage to Nike or Reebok.
Well, actually, Tom, that's not correct. The Port Covington project actually has nothing to do with Under Armour financially. Under Armour is not going to technically, specifically get any TIF money. The developer is Sagamore Development, which is exclusively the private development arm of the CEO of Under Armour, Kevin Plank.
But wouldn't he then still be concerned about certain, you know, financial?
None of that has come up.
So they don't contest then that there's some danger for any financial information about Under Armour or Mr. Plank himself.
Under Armour has never been mentioned in either the open session or the closed session that we now have been able to look at.
So they had a couple of meetings in March, two or three, I guess, and they closed part of those meetings. They sort of went into, I guess, executive session or closed session or something.
Right.
So you and other reporters, Fern Shen from The Brew, Melody Simmons from the Baltimore Business Journal and others, weren't allowed. I mean, they literally closed the door while you guys stood
out
in the hallway. Why? What was their justification at that time?
Well, there's a procedure that has to be gone through, and they have to cite the provision of the Maryland Open Meetings Act that allows for an exception. They did that. The journalists, including us and BBJ, protested in a formal complaint to the Open meeting's compliance board, and they made a decision 2 weeks ago that the reasons that the BDC cited were improper, that they claimed that they were considering the marketing of public securities. The compliance board reviewed the closed session and the closed minutes and found that they weren't doing that at all. And so this is an advisory decision. It has no penalty involved. But it did get the BDC to release on its webpage the minutes of the closed meeting. And those minutes are highly fascinating in terms of explaining much more about the controversy within the BDC involving this plan. Previously, the BDC had approved the plan by a unanimous vote, and that went to the mayor and then to the finance board and now to the city council. What we find is that over these 2 to 3 meetings in the closed sessions, there were lots of discussions and a lot of very important information that the public never heard about until now.
So this is why it really matters that these meetings are closed. And we should say that Arnold Williams, who is the chair of the Baltimore Development Corporation, said essentially that, you know, they messed up because they cited the wrong exceptions the last time they closed the meetings.
Correct.
They closed other meetings just last month, in May.
Yes, yes.
And, you know, again, as you say, the Attorney General's office, this compliance board said it was improper in March. They did it again in May. It's a fuzzy thing. And I guess you and the Sun and others are considering another lawsuit to require them to open these
right.
meetings.
Another protest.
So it does matter. I mean, bottom line is that there are implications for the public when these meetings are not, in fact, open. One of them has to do with the number of this TIF, this tax incremental financing thing. The number 535 million has been tossed around for the last few months. But in fact, one of these closed sessions revealed that the number that Sagamore, the developer, was asking for was 400 million.
Yeah, that's correct.
And the number that's in the ordinance that sits as we speak in front of the city council is 660 million.
Well, let me explain that because it's really fascinating and it's something that's really important for citizens and taxpayers to know. Yes. Apparently, the original request was for a net proceeds of $400 million, which within a matter of a couple weeks, privately back a few months ago, was increased by 33% to $535 million. However, the $535 million, which is the number that's been used and put in public releases and the press has largely used, that too needs to be modified very importantly. The ordinance before the city council never mentions 535. It mentions 660 million, which is substantially more by a quarter more. That is money that would be the gross proceeds that are needed after reserve funds and the cost of issuing the bonds are made. That does not include the interest that would have to be paid on those bonds over a 30-year period. If you looked at that, that would be around a $1.5 billion would be the cost of this TIF.
All right. And again, we've been into the weeds a few times over the last several months about what the TIFs are and whether they cost taxpayers money. And, you know,
the short
argument is that it doesn't actually cost taxpayers money because these are taxes that wouldn't be paid otherwise if the development weren't done. So it's a whole... But we're going to eschew that conversation for this morning.
Well, I think what really was fascinating and very important information is that why did they increase from 400 to 535 that net proceeds? Well, it turns out in the secret session that the deputy mayor for development, a person called Colin Tarbert, explained to the board that the city is now worried that the previous largest TIF that's going to Harbor Point is underfunded and that the TIF will not cover all the infrastructure costs and, in fact, in the future might well require general funds, exactly what the city has said would never happen with TIFs, but they're now raising that possibility. And so this was another very important part of this secret session that has come
to
light.
So let's make clear, Harbor Point's a different project.
That's
but they
correct.
Found that when they approved the TIF for Harbor Point, It's not enough. And now this is money coming out of the taxpayers' pockets.
Could be.
To complete the infrastructure and the things like streets and street lights and that business.
Correct.
There's also, and again, this was in the closed session, so we didn't find out about this until the minutes from these closed sessions were eventually made public. So we should make sure that that's clear. This information is now available. It just wasn't available at the time it happened.
Correct.
There's also a question about what the impact on the city's bond rating is going to be. So we're just going to finish up here. Tell us what that potential impact is as well.
One of the key questions about TIFs is that would it, especially such a huge amount of this TIF, $660 million, would that affect the city's bond rating? Moody's has a rule of the thumb that the city's amount of total bonds, including TIFs, and there's also general obligation bonds, should be no more than 4% of the total assessed taxable value of city property. This would increase that over 4%. The city is trying to get a third-party conduit to do it. But this was a question that was raised a number of times by the BDC board members, which was a debate and a question that was never brought up in the statement and the open meeting where everyone approved it.
But clearly it's something that's on their mind, and we don't, again, know about it until we see these, until we have seen now the minutes of the closed meeting.
That's why they're so important to have.
All right, interesting, complicated stuff. I'll have you back, and we'll keep on top of it. Thanks, Mark. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Mark Reuter is an investigative journalist and longtime Baltimore reporter who since 2010 has been covering the city of Baltimore for the Baltimore Brew, an independent online news source. This is the latest installment of our monthly series, The Accountability Index, which we're presenting in conjunction with the Baltimore Brew. Stay tuned for more conversations in this ongoing series. Coming up after a break for the news, the impact of polls on the political process. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.